Hello everyone and welcome back to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show. The podcast show where we talk all about everything computer vision, from the individual components of the technology including vision, cameras and deep learning, right through to hearing about some of the most interesting applications that companies are using at the moment. Hello everyone and welcome to the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Felix Nasser. Felix is the global software project lead with BMW for the Maps Next Generation team. Felix, great to have you here on the podcast.
Perfect. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to our discussion.
To get us kicked off, Felix, why don't you give us a bit of an introduction into yourself, your background, and before even talking about computer vision, what led you to being where you are today?
Yeah. Thanks. So first of all, maybe a few words about my current role. So I'm since 3 years now the software project lead for BMW Maps Next Generation, as you mentioned, which means I support our teams both internally and with our partners around the globe. And we have suppliers, partners, and internal teams both in the US, Germany, South Korea, China, and so on. And of course, we try to develop again a really exciting product with our team. So that's my current role. And before that, I have been mostly studying computer vision and autonomous driving in Germany and the US. So I started also to study with BMW here in Germany, where they support that they have a program for bachelor students. And I was fortunate enough to be part of that, and which allowed me to study both at the same time, work for BMW and study. And that was then for my bachelor degree in computer science or automotive software engineering. And then after that, I moved to the US for my master's degree to Boston MIT, where I mostly also worked again in autonomous driving and computer vision. Stayed there for 3 years. Also, we worked on a startup there, which we can maybe touch upon later a little bit more. And then I came back to Munich in 2019. And now, as I said, work for BMW.
Nice. Good. So we're here specifically today to not necessarily talk so much about BMW, but more of along the lines of two other projects you've been working on, one called Drainiac.ai and the other one called Shadowcam. Look, let's kick off and let's jump into Shadowcam. Do you want to, I suppose, give a bit of an introduction about what Shadowcam is, what it does?
Sure. So Shadowcam is the approach or the idea that cars or autonomous robots can see around corners based on shadows. And we came up with this idea at MIT because one other project next to us or one other project group next to us worked on a new technique to enhance very weak visual signals. And this inspired us to take that approach and maybe turn it into a safety feature for autonomous cars. And this is really the core idea of Shadowcam, making driving even more safe by predicting what could be out of the direct line of sight for an autonomous robot or a car.
So, I suppose interestingly enough, it sounds like quite a difficult concept. Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, one idea or one use case for this idea would be to, if you think about it, when you drive with a car and, for example, there's parked cars to your right and they're parked quite closely together and there might be a child running after a ball, you might not be able to see the child behind the cars because of the size. And with this technique, you might be able to predict that there's movement out of the direct line of sight and then initiate either a warning to the driver or also issue the emergency brake so that you prevent an accident from happening.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, look, I know because you've got to put as many safety features in these in autonomous vehicles as possible, right?
Yeah.
I know many companies do like double security around, you know, they use cameras, LiDAR and radar. Certain ones pick up different distances. I've heard one before where, you know, a log transportation truck that was actually, you know, the logs generally hang off, what, maybe 10, 6 feet off the end. Mm-hmm. Certain computer vision models were actually picking that up as vegetation and saying you could go right up to the end of the truck, where really that would that wouldn't work.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's a really, really cool concept. And I mean, it's definitely something, it's a new set of eyes for a vehicle or an autonomous vehicle that, I mean, even the human eye, as much information as we take in, I don't know if I'd be able to check a shadow.
Definitely. We would not be able to see it. And that's also where this algorithm comes in, where we specifically make use of advanced computer vision algorithms to enhance this very, very weak signal so that it can be detected by an algorithm.
I'm talking like tunnel vision, not tunnel vision, I mean, but my peripheral vision, particularly when I'm driving in busy areas, streets, towns, city centers.
Yeah.
I'm quite focused on what's in front of me, let alone around the corner and behind me.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So this concept, seen around the corners, checking the shadows, mm-hmm. where does the computer vision come into play with this one?
Yeah. So I think the best way to do this maybe would be to walk you through the core steps of the algorithm. So you can maybe we start with a camera that is mounted onto a robot. In our case, either we use two platforms. We used an autonomous wheelchair, electric autonomous wheelchair, and an autonomous car. And this camera mounted to one of these vehicles then collects, of course, a video stream. And in the next step, you want to make sure that you focus on an area of importance. So you introduce some methods of region of interest definition so that you focus, for example, to the place next to a parked car. Or in the case of the autonomous wheelchair, you focus on a spot on the ground next to a corner. And then, of course, if you think about it quite intuitively, you will realize that if you mount this camera onto a moving platform, it is important and crucial for this algorithm to work that you stabilize the video so that the region of interest is not perturbed too much by the movement of the vehicle. Otherwise, it will be very hard to detect a change of light intensity in these region of interest on the ground based on the different frames you get from the camera.
Yeah. Okay. So what sort of underlining computer vision techniques are you looking in and at this? You know, are you talking convolutional neural networks? Do you, because the vehicle is moving, do you actually have to do object tracking identification? Because your frames will be different as the vehicle's position's different. Yes, you're not tracking an object specifically, but as the vehicle's moving, like how does these types of models, or what models are going into it?
I think the question is a little bit interesting to how to answer whether we use models or not. So on the one hand, of course, we use the models primarily because there is not enough data to train them. And on the other hand, we also have algorithms we want to put into practice that are specifically designed for this feature enhancement.
Okay. So I suppose when it comes to it, you mentioned you're like using more traditional techniques. Do you combine your traditional computer vision algorithms with anything else like mapping, localization, robotics, LiDAR, radar?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So if you think about Shadow Cam, then you can think about it as an additional safety module, which can be integrated into any existing robotic or autonomous driving platform if there's a camera available. So camera, of course, is the crucial part. But other than that, these platforms we use, they were autonomous without, or they would work also without the Shadow Cam because they have all the things in place you need. So they have a mapping, or we mapped the environment before we deployed the vehicle. So we had a prior map, with centimeter level accuracy. And then they have the sensors in place to localize themselves in these maps. And they also have object detection or routing and planning and prediction and control components, which allow the vehicle to, or the robotic platform, allow the platform to move autonomously in the environment. So this shadow cam is really an add-on safety feature coming on top of this.
Nice. Cool. And then I suppose when you look at it, I know this is a hard question, but do you say when you do your techniques, like let's say around LiDAR, radar, you've got your traditional computer vision algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
Are they versus each other? Are they facing? Are they fighting? Or mm-hmm. Is this total set of technologies being empowered by mm-hmm. a collaboration of two different technical sets?
Yeah, it's definitely true that they work together in some way. And it's, of course, an interesting and very challenging problem to combine these input streams. Because usually for autonomous driving, you rely on multiple sets of sensors, which you have to align in some sense. So meaning there's a camera input stream producing bounding boxes. There might be a radar, there might be a LiDAR producing similar bounding boxes. And then first of all, you have to do some kind of sensor fusion to make sure that the environment model you produce with the sensors you have is consistent and also as trustworthy as possible, so that different sensors can validate each other. And I think that's a very important part. And then in addition to that, you also usually have a prediction module, which will tell you how it's most likely that objects around you will move in the future, so that the planning algorithm can take into account the current state of things, the current environment model, and then also can plan around most likely events in the future, both in the near-term and long-term future, so that they can be anticipated when a bicyclist is crossing the street or a pedestrian, and you can maneuver as safely as possible through these environments. And in all of this, what I just described, of course, the shadow cam is only a small component to ensure the safety of the passengers and the other road users.
Nice. And then obviously it's the other project that we said we talk about on this one is Draniac AI.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Draniac? Give us the introduction.
Sure. So Draniac is our idea to deploy deep learning to automate video processing workflows, to put it in one sentence. And this technology, of course, can be applied to multiple use cases. And the first use case we are trying to tackle is the sewer systems or the automation of pipe inspections. And that's where also the name comes from, Draniac, so from drain. And yeah, we are excited to work on this. It's an interesting and challenging problem to deploy some kind of or similar techniques as we worked on during the autonomous driving phase. And now we look at these techniques and technologies and what they can do in another use case or verticals.
Nice, cool. Similar question. Where did the idea or what's the rationale for using these technologies for drains?
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting story. So we started actually off with a completely different idea, and then realized that because initially we thought, okay, because we came from this robotic background, my friends and I were working on this, we came from this more robotic background and initially started to think around combining hardware and software solutions, and maybe working on a robot which you can deploy into the sewer systems and drains or pipes below us, so that the data collection part can be automated. But then we quickly realized that the industry itself around the sewer systems is in a state where even simpler software solutions can already increase or add a lot of value to the customers. Because one example would be that these current reports from sewer systems are distributed via CDs or USB sticks. And this is still a very common practice, where instead with a portal or online solution, you could easily distribute them with a click. And then the customer would be able to see them in the browser without having the need to exchange CDs or so. So we quickly iterated or realized that from this hardware approach we initially took to tackle some of the problems, it's a lot easier and better to start with a software solution in that space.
Okay. Just a question on that. I think I've seen it somewhere. I think it was around Ireland. How we were talking about Irish water, they basically tax us three times for water and then wanted to introduce a water tax as well. So there was obviously a lot of people unhappy with that. there's no water tax now. So the people won. But I think there was a lot of studies that came out and stuff that I found out about it that I thought was very interesting. It was that, like, you know, the water systems, we lose almost like 30 to 40% of water through our systems just through leaking pipes. Is that the underlining? I mean, first off, you can tell me, is that number right or is it very far off?
To be honest, I'm not aware of that number. So the numbers we are looking at are a little bit different KPIs, so to say. We look at numbers where we say, okay, how long does it take to inspect currently with the manual processes? How long does it take to inspect these pipes? How often do errors occur? How many of the pipes are broken? How old is the average sewer system in each country? And these are more the KPIs we look at, but definitely an interesting number. So if that's true, even more so, there's a bigger need to make sure that the sewer systems are well maintained.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously long-term sustainability then as well, that's pretty serious.
Definitely. Because we also realized that it can even happen that due to wrong inspection data, so that when you imagine a sewer inspector goes on site and looks into the sewer system to check whether there's something broken, and then based on a wrong report, it can happen that the wrong parts of the sewer system are replaced. And as you can imagine, since they're underground and so on, it's a quite costly error. So it makes a lot of sense to use technology we have at hand, like deep learning, to help to increase your accuracy and also save manual labor.
Yeah, no, definitely. 100%. And then, so within this, within Drainiac, what are the underlying computer vision models that have built this technology, and how does it work? I suppose essentially, if you want to say as well, what exactly is it detecting in the sewers?
So this is also an interesting question. So of course, we are not the first ones having the idea to deploy deep learning in the sewers and sewer systems. But on the other hand, there's also the market is also a lot less crowded than, for example, autonomous driving. So that's maybe the first thing to mention. And the second thing, currently, if you look at what other people do, it's mostly around supervised learning. Basically, everything we have seen so far is based on supervised learning, meaning that there is some kind of data set created with human experts. And then some kind of variants or CNN variants are trained with that data to detect automatically where and what is broken in the pipe. And what we do now differently is we also filed a patent for this before Christmas last year, is we combine supervised and unsupervised learning, which allows us to speed up the data set generation process. And because we don't need to have any human data or any human data labels now. And it also allows us to do 3D reconstructions based on 2D videos, which was very hard to impossible before.
Okay, nice. And then obviously quite interesting. I'd like to understand how the journey was taking this from research idea into the wild, into production, whatever sort of phrase you want to put on it. Because, look, maybe I'm wrong. I can see this being very difficult to test, particularly at research level. So, look, why don't you sort of tell me about that experience?
Yeah, so definitely that's true, meaning that basically all deep learning models that have been trained in a more confined lab setting, taking them out in the wild is basically always a challenge. So it's also true for us. The advantage we have is that with the partners we got and who work with us, they provided us relatively large amounts of labeled data. And with these, and they are coming from the wild, these are not like cleaned or not from a simulation. Those are videos taken by inspectors in the real world. So I think really it comes down to the data and how close the data distribution you train your model on is to the real world you're testing it or you're deploying it in. And in our case, the training data set or the statistical KPIs of the data set are very, very close to what you would experience in the real world. And this, of course, increases then the accuracy of the predictions.
Cool. What would you say then for anyone who's looking to take a research concept and move it into production? What sort of advice would you offer?
I would always look for a challenge that's worth to solve. That sounds maybe like a simple advice, but I think before you spend really a lot of time on a project, make sure that's a problem people actually care about. And so what we did in our case is we looked, before we started to work on this, we first did some market analysis, and we also checked with potential partners whether they would be interested in developing some kind of solution jointly. And I would really strongly recommend to do this, because otherwise you might end up spending a lot of time on solving a problem and no one cares in the end. So I think this is really the first advice. And then more from a technical point of view, I think, of course, this might also sound like a very easy advice, but test and iterate quickly, and also realize focus on the most important part, most important features first. So in our case, we realized quite quickly that in addition to the predictions of what might be broken, the inspector also wants to know where in the pipe it's broken. If you think about it, of course, it makes a lot of sense, because if you don't know at which point in the pipe it's broken, you also don't know where you need to fix it. But we weren't aware of this. So make sure that you are, so that the problem you're solving is really solving the real world challenges the people who will use your solution face. And in terms of maybe building a product, it's, if you do deep learning, of course, it's always most importantly in the beginning around data. And then once there's enough data, then of course it comes down to how accurate your labels are, how good the models are, and how your software infrastructure is supporting what you need to accomplish. And I think then it really becomes, I don't know if you know the Google paper around this, but there's so much more to deep learning than the data and the model. So if you need to serve the models, you need to update it, you continuously train them, make sure that when the user is saying, okay, this might be a wrong prediction, that you correct that in the data set again. So there's lots of infrastructure to work and deploy around the core tech. And this is maybe even more challenging and more work to do than people might think.
Yeah, nice. Look, it's really, really good and nice oversight there, Felix. Thank you. One final question I want to leave you. I want to leave you with some of your I want to leave and take some of your thoughts on the way around computer vision, around trends. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen a lot of breakthrough technologies over the last 2 years. I think, you know, you've had StyleGAN and stuff last year really accelerate that. I've even seen some amazing concepts where computer vision is now being matched with NLP. Mm-hmm. So I think it's vision is then creating NLP labels. So there's lots of really cool things I've seen happen.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years. What's your thoughts on computer vision trends, technologies, or what do you think is going to be groundbreaking, if anything?
Mm-hmm. Interesting question. So I think maybe zooming out a little bit. So I think if we look at the last 200 years since the first industrial revolution, I think what we mostly saw is that manual tasks got automated. And I think what we see now, with deep learning, specifically around computer vision, is that more brain-heavy jobs that people thought could never be automated by robots or machines, now we are starting to be able to automate these as well. And I think this is a very, very interesting development, because it might be even similar to what we have seen in the 1900s, where there were, I think, around 40% of the workforce back then was working in agriculture or farming, and now it's 2%. And if you think about how many jobs might change or get automated and some kind of new jobs might develop around these new technologies, I think we will see a similar strong effect of these computer vision and AI technologies in our society and workforce. Because, yeah, I think, as I said, in the past, it was manual processes, and now even more creative and office jobs can be automated as well. And I think this would be really a major impact. And besides the workforce, I think it's super interesting to think about what else can be done, maybe not with computer vision, but in general about technology and so on. So I think if you would have asked people 200, 100 years ago that we can do the things we can do nowadays with our smartphones and with the internet and so on, they would have thought we are magicians. So let's see what happens in the next 100 years.
I think there's a lot more even to come from that when we start to, you know, combine computer vision with AR, XR. Whether that's going to be a breakthrough technology soon or not, I still think it's going to have a huge impact though also.
Yes.
Well, look, that takes us up for time. So for everyone listening, this is the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest was Felix Nasir. Felix, thank you for being such a wonderful guest. It was great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Computer Vision in Production podcast with your host, Anthony Kelly. To make sure you get updates on the latest episodes of the show, make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast listening app or add me on LinkedIn.